I'm John Batchelor with Malcolm Honlein. We're joined by Gabriel Noronha, Executive Director of the Polaris National Security, a fellow with the Jewish Institute for National Security of America, and for the Trump administration, Special Advisor for Iran at the State Department under Secretary Pompeo. Gabriel, a very good evening to you. The election for the replacement of Mr. Raisi perishing in a helicopter crash some weeks ago is within hours, the voting in Iran. There are six candidates. One is said to be a reformer. One is a cleric. The others all present themselves as hardliners, various parts of the IRGC or other bad acting, including one nuclear weapons negotiator once upon a time. Right now, Kalibaf is said to be the inside favorite. Your comment on the significance of this vote, who is chosen president and what it means for us. Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks for having me, John. Well, the elections in Iran are typically more like selections. Out of groups of hundreds of potential candidates, the regime insiders block all but a very select handful to run with the blessing of the supreme leader and what's called the Guardian Council. So the six that we have running now are all insiders. They're all people who have supported the regime for decades. And what we're seeing here is really a race for a cabinet minister position. The president in Iran is in charge of domestic affairs, roads, bridges, infrastructure, education, the budget. They don't have much of a role in national security. But what we're seeing is a very interesting fight between the vast majority of the candidates who are the hardliners and one reformer candidate. Now, in Iran, a decade ago, the reform movement was very popular among Iranians, and they elected a reform candidate in 2009 who got stripped off the ballot after he won. And then President and Hassan Rouhani in 2013. Since that time, the Iranian people have grown entirely disillusioned with the reform movement. And almost all of them who originally supported the reform movement are just saying, we're staying home tonight. And so I think what we're going to see is very low participation in Iran at the polling booths. And you'll probably see this go to a runoff, which will happen in a couple of weeks between at least two hardline candidates, possibly one hardline candidate and this reformer.
Malcolm?
What do you see now the strength of the U.S. sanctions on Iran and other leverage and are motivating other countries to impose stricter sanctions as Iran appears to be becoming more and more aggressive in its support for the terrorist entities and its proxies in the region?
Well, I think you should always judge a sanctions program by the results. In the Trump administration, when I was working on sanctions, we had Iran down to about 300,000 barrels of oil exported each day. Oil is the lifeblood of this regime. It's about half their government revenue. Today, under the Biden sanctions, which aren't really being enforced, they're exporting close to 2 million barrels of oil per day. Now, what we're still seeing is the Europeans haven't joined our sanctions. The Chinese are doing everything they can to bust through our sanctions. And so you don't really see a lot of creativity from this administration about enforcing or advancing the sanctions. And in fact, we've often seen them telling the Europeans to ignore our sanctions or to reduce pressure on the regime. So the regime today is back out of bankruptcy. They are refilling their coffers and able to increase a lot of spending to terrorism, which is undermining the security of the entire Middle East.
We go now to the threat from Iran. After that missile barrage in April, it's been unclear to me where Iran is taking its surrogates, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, Kataib, Hezbollah in Iraq. Is there an understanding of what the war aim is for Iran? Do they keep this up indefinitely? Do they keep this up until the American presidential race? How do you see this, Gabriel?
So Iran is in a very interesting moment now because it's trying to decide whether it's going to go for a nuclear weapon. And if it does, how it positions its proxies is of the utmost importance. They act as a shield for Iran, where they sort of say, if Israel or if the United States attacks its nuclear program, then we will deploy all these proxies to unleash their entire arsenal against Israel, against U.S. military and civilians in the area. Until then, they're holding them in, Iran is holding their proxies in reserve. They don't want Hezbollah to be destroyed by Israel because then their insurance policy basically taken away. In the interim, they're trying to do as much training, as much equipping, and building up their missiles and rocket arsenal so that they can be as effective a deterrent as possible to protect Iran.
Malcolm?
When you see we see intelligence reports, Israel, the United States, and others showing that the weaponization activities, though, seem to be moving ahead. Is there a way of mobilizing the international community? The IAEA, again, did not take any kind of heavy action, and it looked like the U.S. Was trying to dissuade some of our partner countries from taking and joining in that resolution of condemnation. How do we then do anything that contains them? Do we have any credibility with the Iranian regime that we are really prepared to act if they go beyond the limited measures you talked about?
So taking a step back, where Iran's nuclear program is today is that they have enough enriched material that if they wanted to break out and get a nuclear weapon, they could build about 8 weapons in a month and 12 in about 3 months. But what they haven't yet completely finished is the ability to put that uranium into a device that explodes and into a device that they could then put on a missile and try to hit Tel Aviv or Jerusalem. These are the important elements, and these are the things that constitute basically what Israel or the United States would call a red line. What we've started seeing in the last couple months is that Iran is secretly building the weaponization components. They're starting to dig new facilities underground. They're starting to build all the components together. Some Israeli officials are telling me that we're in probably a narrow 6-month window to stop an Iranian bomb. At the end of the day, Europe and the UN, the international community, needs to decide, are they going to put pressure on Iran? Do they want to prevent the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism from getting a weapon or not? There's a lot of things they can do. They can put back the sanctions, which they've lifted on Iran, as a first step to say, look, we are willing to impose consequences here. Right now, we've seen no appetite from either the U.S. or the international community to show real leadership.
The allies in Europe, where are they, Gabriel, right now? Can we generalize about them? Nuclear program, war in the Middle East, aggression, the Ayatollah, do they have an opinion?
You know, one thing that I've heard in the last year or so is that they're actually quite frustrated with the United States. And they're telling me that the United States is the one holding them back from stronger action against Iran. That's a huge change from when I was in the State Department, when they were typically the ones urging restraint and trying to seek diplomacy. They have gotten to the point now where they are fed up with Iran. They want to do more, but at the same time, they're very split on Israel. They don't really want to support Israel publicly. And so they've kind of been on the sidelines because they are either deferential to U.S. action or they are hesitant. And so they are fading more and more away from the story at all and really saying this is a U.S., this is an Israeli problem to solve.
Gabriel Noronha is the executive director of Polaris National Security, also a fellow with the Jewish Institute for National Security of America. He served in the State Department as special advisor for Iran, to Secretary Pompeo, Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents. I'm John Marshall.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,